Welcome to another episode of the Astro Podcast. Today we have with us Sergio Orozco Esperi. He is an associate professor at the Institute of Philosophy of the University of Antioch in Colombia. He has a mixed background, you know, in philosophy and then physics, and he has a PhD in science studies from the University of Edinburgh, so quite a variety of lines that converge. Thank you for joining us, Sergio, today. You're currently doing a lot of research, and you have even a project that is exploring cosmologies, shifts in cosmology, and a thing that is particularly interesting to me, which are the repertorio, so the almanacs and the publications that are going to move and popularize all this new cosmology, particularly in the new world and in the Spanish and Iberian universe. So please tell us a bit about that area of your research.
Well, Luis, thank you so much for having me here. It's a great honor to be in this series. It's a great place to get together and talk about the things we like and we are researching. As you mentioned, yeah, I'm working on the repertorios and which are the very specific kind of almanac that emerged, particularly in Spain and Portugal, in the late 15th, early 16th century, particularly. And they're interesting to me for two reasons. One, because they became incredibly popular, not only in the Iberian Peninsula and Europe, but also in the Americas. That's one aspect. But the other one is that popularity not only carried traditional kind of like a calendric and information that we find in other almanacs, but they also began to incorporate complex, progressively more complex astrological, medical, cosmological, sometimes navigational information. So in this sense, we have early almanacs that started from, especially with Andrés de Lee, Repertorio de los Tiempos, that is like a rather short 60-70 pages, a little print with some tables of the moon with eclipses. And then by the end of the 16th century, we have works around 600 pages with all kind of forecast on eclipses, constellations, latitudes, longitudes, information on instruments. So what I'm trying to make sense in my research is how these almanacs became a vehicle to convey information not only of what was happening in Europe, but what was also happening in the Americas, as these almanacs began to be used also in different latitudes, in different longitudes. So some of the forecasts didn't work well, some of the frameworks didn't fit properly. So they began to be transformed. And there's a considerable number of American repertorios, and most of them in manuscript, that they were written by local groups or priests or immigrants, sometimes mestizo, sometimes even almost even indigenous people, mm-hmm. To make sense of their kind of like surrounding reality with this tool. So what I'm trying to do now is to make sense of these repertorios of vehicles of knowledge, or kind of like places where knowledge is produced and circulates between the Americas and Europe.
Yeah. They're almost like, and I've discussed this before, they're sort of like the current day popular science, because they're going, it's perhaps a very complex equivalent to do it like this, but they are, as you said, they are highly popular, and they not only give that information of the almanac, you know, lunations, eclipses, you know, when the calendric stuff, but they also teach, The ones I've seen in here in Portugal, they are teaching a little bit of cosmology, a little bit of astronomy, some hints of astrology as well. Most of them have the ones I've seen have a nice the larger ones that you mentioned, the ones of 600 pages or so, have even a good section on medical astrology, recognizing illnesses and temperaments and all of that. So they're quite a complex genre of publication.
They are there, and I think that they're very revealing because they show that the production of knowledge in the Spanish America or in general in Iberian America use different formats, but was massive. It was popular, and it was not only restricted to a certain group. So about that, there's a super interesting breaking point. Initially, like almanacs were just like another almanac. And when the printing press became very popular, obviously printers saw a good chance of making money with printing almanacs, not only the little leaf for the year, but more complex almanac for 20 years, 30 years. And Andrés de Lis, the famous one that published a forecast from 1485 to 1550. So if you just, got this one, you were supposed to be covered for a long time. So it became incredibly popular, but because it's tied to the history of the book, these books don't have or didn't have initially any licensing. So printers were free to print these books, so they were copied. Obviously, Delis with the Urus and brothers made a beautiful edition, very accurate, very complex. But printers took these and printed and reproduced like with no mercy and calculating tables in whatever way. So by 1530s, a very important mathematician, Sancho de Zalalla, who was involved in the Tordesillas commissions, and he was a professor in Salamanca of the chair of astrology astronomy, he was very worried, and he said, "Look, everyone is using this, and it gives an idea of the impact of these almanacs. Everyone is using these repertorios, and they are poorly calculated. There's all kind of varieties. Eclipses do not really match. So I'm going to make a corrected one." So he corrects the tables. He gets an imperial license by then with Charles V. Is then granted by the Prince Philip II at the moment. But he get an imperial license to protect that knowledge and restrict the circulation. But as you mentioned, he starts introducing educational material. So he even introduces information about basic arithmetic. So he says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are numbers and are represented by these symbols. And he puts the Arabic numbers. And this is a line, this is a circle, these are basic instruments. He explains, I don't know, Jacob's stuff or an astrolabe and the very, very basic aspects. So in this sense, for example, this 1532 repertorio incorporates not only information, but also an attempt to teach people how to make sense of this table and add the most powerful thing, in a way, how to produce tables for other locations, how to produce basic calculations for places not covered by these almanacs. So in this sense, and a few years after that, it comes Jerónimo de Chávez's famous Cronografía, which is like the massive reform of the genre. With four books, more complex. We can talk more about that, but that one, it's in fact an answer showing that repertorios were widely used, and they were produced results that had an impact on society. Yeah, because physicians were making wrong calculations based on wrong, or mistaken tables of positions. So it shows a bit that they were important. And they began to incorporate initially educational elements. And then, together with these educational elements, basic cosmological information that became really sophisticated by the end of the century, up to include debates on the nature of comets, for example, or some debates on the nature of the humors or the human body as it is different or not in the Americas. So it begins to grow and became a scenario of kind of like authentic interaction in a sense of emerging ideas and problems.
It's going to reflect all the ideas that are moving on and are concerning people, the novelties, yeah. And even historical elements, they're very common in these almanacs.
Yes.
Lists of kings and events and stuff like that, which is very, very informative. So it's an almost compendiums of knowledge. Yeah, I am convinced that most people would their first approach to astronomy, astrology, and any mathematical science, you know, would come from an almanac. They
Yeah,
would have a
exactly.
basic notion, a basic reading from the almanac, and then they would eventually move on to more sophisticated teaching materials. Yeah, but they are a very interesting genre.
Yeah, as you say, for example, and I think that's interesting of what Jerónimo de Chávez does in 1548, because he publishes a Castilian translation of Sacro Bosco in 1545. And what is amazing of that translation is, like, okay, it's a translation with really long commentaries, but both in the commentaries and in the graphic language, he incorporates the new world. So you find the traditional depiction of Sacro Bosco, you know, to calculate, distances from the sea and stuff, or heights, that you find, instead of finding the map of Europe, you find some depiction of the new world. So it begins to be there. He begins to make sense there initially in the Sacro Bosco translation. But in 1548, he says, okay, I'm going to do this in the Repertorios. And then he's systematized, and in a sense, Repertorius, he kind of, like, with, I think, with his brilliant mathematical mind, he says, okay, the unifying concept is time. So the key to understand and make sense of this is time. So time involves the motion of planets, but also human history, but also sickness and disease, because when we are sick, there is an evolution, so that's why, for example, medical obviously is important as well for the astrological connection, and how, the astrology is supposed to be involved in the forecast of disease, but also in understanding the evolution. So also the body is presented, and diseases are presented also as something having a history, having a time, something that on which we can calculate. So interestingly, in a sense, these repertorios end up mobilizing a lot of mathematics, not only for planets, but also for history, and also even for medical aspects, that astrology was highly mathematized already in the by the 16th century. So what we find in these repertorios is an attempt to unify these and say, this is kind of like a compendium of everything dealing with time, including even some of them put some philosophical debates on eternity, atom, stuff, or the end of the world as well, with some eschatology and religious aspects. But these end up being incredibly consistent, especially for American readers who understand a lot of mathematics, cosmology, astrology, medicine, but also Christian religion through these repertorios, and see a unified kind of, like, worldview in these works. So I think they're very, very powerful ways to systematize knowledge, but also ways in which knowledge is transformed at the same time.
I was thinking of well, part of that of the repertoire that particularly interests me, which is, as you were mentioning, the functioning of astrology in the new world, you know. And I think, as far as I'm aware, the first in-depth debate on that occurs in the Repertorio of Enrico Martinez that he publishes in Mexico in 1606, if I'm remembering the date correctly. Or whereabouts. I'm terrible with dates. As an historian, this is sad to say, but I'm terrible with
It's
dates.
okay. It's in 1603, but it's the first decade of the 17th. Yeah.
It's
Is
the
that that's
first,
exactly.
and he does. He does, as far as I'm aware, the first, you know, reflection on how astrology might work in the new in the Southern Hemisphere with the reversal of seasons. Is that important? It's that important. You know, and I think He is the one that jump starts that discussion later on throughout the 17th century. If there's something earlier in depth, I'm not aware of.
I think there's nothing more systematic than that, because as you mentioned, in the fourth part of repertory, like traditionally, the tradition they follow, most of them follow Chavez distinction. So you have usually one book dealing with measurements of time, or day, night, month, year, solar year, etc. A second book dealing with what we call cosmology, which is basically a mix of Sacro Bosco and Theorica Planetarium. You usually have a third book on calendrics, how to calculate Easter, how to know where is this pass Jewish Passover, to establish that difference is very, very important, how to calculate in different places. And you have a fourth book that is normally a book called On Mudanza de los Tiempos. And it's interesting because we still keep in our languages, in our contemporary languages, the idea that time is also related to seasons as well, and to some condition. Is making a bad time or is making a good time not only mean it to something entirely objective in the sense of nature, but also how it affects us. So it's making a good time or a bad time, so we can get sick. And this is still preserving our natural languages. So in this fourth part, that they normally call Mudanza de los Tiempos, it's also called a part of for the rustic astrologer. And the rustic astrologer is supposed to be concerned, I mean, how times or the change of times affects human body and can be used for helping people to get, or reestablish the health. So that's the basic structure. So when this begins to travel, the earliest, let's say, local almanacs that appear in the Americas are rather partial. They kind of like select a few stuff from there. So there is one very famous one that was published, or a translation is written in a world, but it only picks up some basic stuff and says what is good for some location. This is in New Spain. What is good, for example, like, I don't know, in this month, Europeans take a bath, but because here this month is cold, then we're not gonna, take baths except if there are hot baths, this kind of thing. So there's a bit of an adaptation. But the first systematic discussion of astrology and how it can be understood in the New World is definitely in Enrico Martinez so far. What we got before that, as far as I know as well, is a partial adaptation for very, very practical purposes, but no systematic overview as Martinez tries to do. And so that's why his repertoire is very, very important to understand the role of knowledge in this specific context.
And I've recently researched that, and agree or not with his positions on things, the way he thinks and reflects on the topic is very clever, very ingenious, the way he does it. He then is criticized further on by Cisneros and but the idea is very clever, let's say. It's a good idea. It's a good way of approaching the topic. So he and there you have a repertoire, doing this reflection for the first time, all these considerations. Definitely, they're very important pieces, and I think with your research currently, we might have more information on what
Yeah,
the
I hope
philosophy
so.
of astrology, what are they doing, what are they attributing locally, how are they dealing with it? Because I'm sure that's where we're going to find the discussion. Because in European sources, we don't have them. There's very few European sources where they decide to discuss this properly. There are a couple of them in some astrological authors, but not enough, as you would expect, because I believe, most people in Europe are not really concerned with the new world or the problems they're facing. It's going to be those who are settling, working, and born, and raised in the new world that are going to develop these concerns and try to work out what they're going to do with this European tradition that is moving to completely new geographical areas.
But interestingly, about that, for example, that we talk about this is that I was doing a research about how the early fellows of the Royal Society were interested in the Spanish American, how they found information about the Spanish America in a moment of war and political tension between Spain and England. And interestingly, they relied a lot on repertorios because interestingly, repertorios say a lot about the New World. They give information on latitude, on longitude, on the location of specific cities. Some of them even give some basic navigational information. So they're a bit off the radar, kind of being protected as a source of knowledge, and they had access to them. So we have kind of like early fellows of the Royal Society collecting these repertorios and making notes on them, especially about information on the Americas. So it's interesting as well that these repertorios end up providing some information on the Americas. We normally think this was mostly done by the crones and it came from the works, I don't know, Gomara, Bernal del Castillo, this kind of. But also, repertorios played a role in giving information about the resources because, I don't know, for example, Zamorano, who is a favorite of the English in this period, he says, I don't know, not exactly where, in very precise way, but he says there's gold, there's emerald, there's silver, there are these animals, there's this staff, or there's this tree from which indigenous get an oil that is used for healing wounds. And you check some of these early fellows of the Royal Society got repertorios highlighted on these parts, on info, on the early American information. So it's interesting how also these serve to popularize probably something that we haven't tracked enough, how this also contributed to produce an image of the New World across Europe. So there's still a lot to do about that, and there's a lot of repertorios still sleeping there because they're fragile and they were heavily used. So even if there's a good number of them preserved, I suspect that the most interesting one were lost because they were heavily used, so probably they didn't survive.
Again, it's a genre thing that, as you said, it's used, and the ones that have more, fixed calendar data, they're just for these years or for those years, don't survive because almanacs, repertoires are a bit more robust publications, but almanacs, as I always say, they don't survive in the same way that newspapers don't survive unless someone stores them, because once you read it, it's gone. It's yesterday's news, so you're not going to use it again, unless again you have a library and you preserve those kinds of documents. It has been difficult to find these materials, as we've discussed before, and I've also tried to research some, and I asked for your help at some point regarding locating some of these things, and they're nowhere to be found.
No, it's very difficult. For example, there's a but it's just how history works in this aspect. There's a very interesting edition of Zamorano 1594, and there's a copy of a Spanish pilot that was bought in Lisbon, and we know this because he writes this on the front page, and he writes like this belongs to pilot Juan Ramos, and I da 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 da. He writes where he got the book, and he makes some notes. And from the condition of the book, we can say that probably the book was on board at some point. But the book was preserved because at some point that was bought by Hans Sloane when he was obsessed buying things about the Americas. So the book quickly was put in library and survived. But I suspect if it was not, passing this book from pilot to pilot was not cut by a collector, by an English collector at some point, it will be lost at the moment. So these little things, but finding this is difficult, So this is like the tracks of how these things survive. That is very mysterious, that we don't really expect to find this stuff here or there, and they appear. So that's a lot of the archival work I'm doing a lot of archival work, trying to see how repertorio circulated, especially now in this direction, you know, to create an image of the Americas. But I'm also working, started to move on how the conceptions of especially body and environment change over time in repertorios as soon as they began to be used in different latitudes, as soon as they began to be aware, okay, we're going to use this in the tropics, but there is no seasons where humidity is evidently different, and where the bodies of people here is evidently different. I got a hint already, especially of early 17th century one, that they may be interesting, and they may be connected later on to slavery also, because there was a real medical concern of the survival of the slaves brought from Africa, and to understand how to heal them. So there's a repertorio that kind of like tries to make sense of this transplant of people from Africa to a tropical environment. But that's still something I'm starting to work on, to move on this idea of body environment, and obviously something that you're working on a lot, and is the different astral influences of the South on different kind of bodies coming from all over the world. For example, in the early English debate in the 17th century, mid 17th century, about that, there was a real concern about if body was going to be changed by living in the tropic, if white English were going to turn darker by living into the tropics, and they're really worried about the power of environment on the nature and composition of body. And part of this is reflected in the late almanacs, for example.
There's a good article. What's his name? About that, the basis for racial bias based on astrology.
The Canizares Guerra
Izar,
article,
exactly.
yeah, New Stars, New Bodies. He works on this 17th century stuff very interestingly, showing
Yeah,
kind of
it's
like,
already, well, it's not new paper, but it's still
yeah.
very good in the
Is
way
it
he.
still valid? What I think is, like, we know more about this period, especially 18th century, but we know nothing or not much about this earlier, and already, you know, Spaniards and Portuguese were worried about this, especially as they start to settle properly in the New World. So with every viceroy, with every important politician, or, you know, manager going to the New World, with very rich, influential person settling, there's always a physician. And there's always a physician who is in charge of, you know, keeping these people healthy. And these physicians normally use almanacs. They normally have almanacs, but they need to understand what this person is eating here in this context, with no seasons or in the middle of this, you know. So if you were lucky, you will be settling in Cartagena. But if you were not that lucky, you will settle in Bogota, that is very cold and humid and far away. So conditions were different. So they're trying to understand this, especially the big kind of like difference between the coast and top of the Andes. You know, almanacs were not very prepared to understand this rainforest on top of mountains that could be hot and humid, but very, very high. So that creates a bit of a problem. So in the early period, when they settle on the coast, it's more or less okay, because most almanacs, for example, were calculated for Sevilla. So they think, oh, this is gonna work. This is still okay. It's like Canary Island. This is okay. But when they start going up, they realize this doesn't work. We don't have the breeze from the sea. So what are we gonna do? And here we see a lot of interesting changes, in the medical theories. Not big conceptual changes, but small practical changes that are really, really valuable to understand how knowledge was as used and produced. And
Yeah, I think you're right. I agree with you with that point. It's the little things. It's in the practice, in the everyday practice that they're having to face it, that we see the changes and we see the discussion. We don't really seem to see the discussion in the more theoretical, you know, where it's the practical. What am I going to do with this new situation. I have people ill, I have people with problems, I need to take care of it. How am I going to follow this and understand what's happening? And that's quite interesting. And one
Yeah,
of the things that
even in the early period of the English colonization of the Caribbean island, they were using Spanish almanacs because they thought that the Spanish already knew how to deal with the weather. So they were smuggling almanacs and trying to get them in London to send them to Barbados, to Jamaica, because they thought, oh, Spaniards already know how to deal here. They just left here or lost here, but they know. So they were bringing this. So we find it's an amazing complex connection in this daily practice that, as you mentioned, it's I think is the key to understand this period.
And I think, for example, in the astrological part, the little that I've been, I could see, it would be a more in-depth, and systematic study must be made. But they're following, most likely, and the ones I know, the attributions already given by the Spanish when they conquered all those areas, when they assumed power there. Clearly, they're using the same tradition that's already established. So, almanacs, rapporteurs are going to be definitely the source of these things, because they're not presenting us with any new material. They're just restating what appears to be common knowledge. So it has to come from previous sources, and the previous sources there are the Spanish, basically Portuguese eventually. So they're building on what's already known or not known, really, about those regions.
I think that's a fascinating thing. So it's very challenging because it poses a big challenge to the way history of the period has been done, history of science of the period, because we don't have the big treatises, we don't have the big sphere of public opinion where knowledge is debated or used in connection with other stuff, but we have enough amount of knowledge circulating, produced, transformed, integrated into society, transforming realities. So we don't have the advantage of having these big treatises and stuff, but still we have material to track. So also, I think it's a good way to think history of science in a lot of methodological changes. Like science is not only producing big treatises, science is not only producing printed sources, science is not only produced by big names, it's also producing these kind of like small little changes, incremental applications that come here, circulate, transforms. And so I think that that's also a good way to understand that this period is a challenge as well to think the history of science in a different way.
Definitely. And this project you have, does it have a time limit, or how does it work at this point?
I'm expecting to have I have a until October to finish the first part that consists basically in what I'm finishing now is like the characterization of what we can call the genre or the tradition. So how many were produced, where, what were the basic content, some basic idea of circulation. So it's a bit like an index of editions, not of copies, hopefully of copies at some day, but for now of editions of almanacs and repertorios and how they were made and how they circulated. And I'm also trying to do in this part highlighting the basic cosmological ideas there, mostly astronomical, so to speak, ideas. And in October I'm moving on into a new phase working on nature, body, and environment. So I'm gonna fully focus on the conceptions of what we could call rustic astrology. So I'm gonna get closer even to the history of astrology there and medicine. So I'm expecting a second part that's probably gonna last a couple of years working on this specific fourth section because it's the hardest for them. It's the one that works less well. You can use the same methods to calculate latitude and longitude here and there, but you cannot use the same calculations of the environment in Sevilla or in Bogota. So this is where, or there's a big challenge between the global and the local, between the abstract mathematics, the forecast of the theory, and the use of knowledge and the application or the concrete problem. So I'm going to dig into that part, that I'm expecting to start the next year and work a few years on that. And at the same time, keep feeding the database of repertorios, editions, and visual language and characteristics.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Are you planning on doing any editions or at least have something online, the catalog, digitized versions? That would be
Yeah,
interesting.
I'm working on right now. I'm working as well with an amazing team, to produce the first database with Digital Humanities. So we're working on a very basic, we're a complex database with some basic visualization of edition, year of production, basic information on holders, circulation, number of page, number of diagrams. Also some information that is interesting for the history of the book, if it's Gothic types, Roman types, if it's a mix, format, because format says a lot. The format moves from, sometimes you get a folio, but sometimes you even get a 12th that you think, oh, this is, was definitely used for being used. It was thought to be used here and there. So we have a working on this database of repertorios that is going to be online, freely accessible, with some information of some copies, like the most relevant or more beautiful or more influential copies, highlighted. And I'm also projecting some databases on geographic information, that is on repertorios, trying to show how the world becomes global in repertorios. And it starts with a table of longitudes of 10 cities. And by the end of the 17th century, you have around 400 cities all over the world there. So I'm also trying to see how the world expanded using some digital humanities tools to those visualizations. So far, there's going to be a good database, I hope, to grow on this information.
Yeah, that's excellent. That will be a very, very useful tool for research, for further research. And especially if you can get some of the copies of the most difficult ones to find, because there's so few of them are online. It's incredible.
Exactly. There, for example, of the first edition of Chavez, there's no digital copy, and there are only three editions, one in London, one in Bogota, one in Indiana. Well, it's a matter of copyrights now, how to deal with this stuff, but I want to make accessible at least some very valuable, unique information of these copies, that probably libraries do not have it online because they have a lot of other things to digitalize first, probably. But I'm planning to make available some of this stuff online, because they're really, really incredibly valuable to understand all kind of stuff. I mean, you find information on, even for historians of architecture, there's information on construction of techniques, instruments, navigation. So there's plenty of stuff that, like, obviously, as a historian of science, I'm reading this from certain perspective, but there's more than that, that is very, very useful to understand that.
There are some even ones that I've seen here in Portugal, probably have similar stuff that even have small paper astrolabes built in, so you can cut down and create your own astrolabe for basic calculations, which is incredible because the book is offering you the tool itself in the book, which is fabulous.
It's just amazing. For example, the Enrico Martinez one you mentioned, that one is full of beautiful volvos, and some of them are supposed to be cut and taken out, not there in the book, but taken out to use them somewhere else. So that's absolutely amazing.
Because I'm seeing them, you know. So if someone, I'm thinking, if someone wants to start basic astrology, for example, and wants to calculate, those vowels are going to be very, very useful for basic, calculations and to facilitate as a table now or software does now for the same kind of practice. So yeah, it is quite interesting and how powerful these tools are.
They're cutting edge technology in a sense for the 16th and 17th century, and they are very, very powerful tools for calculation. I mean, and this is what you were mentioning earlier, that how they move from just giving the table to give people the way to compute tables somewhere else, and then even to controvert the techniques of calculating tables here and there. So there's an incredible complex evolution on these as tools to produce results here and there, you know. So it's amazing how they became these very, very powerful, in a sense, devices to do stuff, all kind of stuff in all over the world.
I think it's an incredible project you have. I think it's going to give us a lot of good information and information on a kind of geography that we really don't have, because most of this period is centered in England, you know, the North America and all of that. But we do have a lot of th very interesting, cutting-edge things happening in the Iberian world, Iberian slash American world, which people usually are not aware of. And a lot of the things we see later on are already being spoken, you know, a century early or more by these early processes of colonization and exploration. So it's quite interesting to really have a, you know, a global overview of how this whole process unfolds. So yeah, I'm looking forward to see more results
Well, thank you so
from your
much.
material.
Yeah, hopefully there's gonna be way more there, and yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing this with us, and best of luck to your project. I'll be following it closely, as you know, and perhaps later on we can discuss, you know, when you have more information and more interesting stuff to share with us here at the project.
Yeah,
Thank you.
always honored to be here. So happy to come back to when something, you know, a landmark happens in my project and share with you everything that's going on. Thank you so much for this very kind invitation.
Thank you.